fashion victims. I never drink pims, give me my tail straight. Nice my mind state, bringing flames to my throat as I float. I bust quotes from my inner mind's page. Roots by cascades rain down like typhoons. They be blessing in that boom, so I boom till I'm holy. The feeling is oversight. Fat rolling, pulling, now I bounce like presses that burst from brassiers. My purpose of being freeing these next type of gears, cause I'm cool.
You know, when you hear that, you've locked into Boom Boom Time, the show that
brings you the oldies, old calypso, lots of old steel funk, show disco funk, lots okay. of old reggae.
I am.
You are Sister B.
And you are?
DJ Sloan.
He is?
Angel.
Okay.
Flap, 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 flap. Good afternoon, Montreal. Good afternoon.
Wow, what a week. Wow, what a week. What a show we have planned. I can tell you that when the person walked through the door, the hog that a hogger was full of sustenance.
It was nourishment for the heart.
I'm telling you, this woman is so formidable. I am pleased. She has been my big sister for years, and she has had such a fabulous, fabulous career, an interesting life, and she has, if nothing else, impacted the Montreal Black community. It's Marlene Jennings.
Hi.
Big sister!
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I tell
an
you.
An auntie.
An auntie. Yes, Storm. Give me this. You right? Yeah. You and your aunties, Auntie Marlene. You remember where we went? It was such a long time ago. Yes. I don't think she remembers when we went to...
To the burger.
The burger joint. Yeah. What's your burger place?
Burger DeVille.
Burger DeVille, right. Former MP, Minister of Parliament. I believe you were also a parliamentary secretary.
Yes.
That would have been to Martin or Gretchen?
To Paul Martin.
Paul
Prime
Martin.
Prime Minister. I was, and before that, I was parliamentary secretary to the Solicitor General, which has now become the Minister for Emergency Preparedness and Public Safety. And I was also parliamentary secretary to the Minister for International Cooperation.
She didn't do enough things while she did there. She didn't sleep and snooze.
No. It's like she only got two jobs. So for me, when I was in Parliament, you know, sitting on a bunch of committees, being parliamentary secretary, and being involved in the community, mm-hmm. for me, that was just normal life.
That was... Mm-hmm. And we're going to try to touch some of that stuff. When I'm done, I'm going to fix the camera because, or maybe we'll get you to swing around a little bit. Come, kid, so that at least they're seeing pretty Marlene. There's pretty Marlene. All righty. Then now, after the party lost and we had the dark years of Harper, yes, I said it,
yes.
You went into the Jewish community.
Well, I lost my election in 2011, and Harper won initially as a minority government in 2006, and then in 2008 he became a majority government, and 2011, Liberals
know,
imploded.
Yes,
and the NDP won.
That's
so
right. The wave
seats.
Of orange,
the orange wave. Yeah. So that's when I lost my election. And yes, from there I went into the Jewish community, and I was hired as the executive director of the YMYWHA, the Jewish Y, as the executive director, the first, I believe, non-Jew. And the first non-white.
She not easy. She not easy, so she's there. And what I love about her is she's people folk, real people, did her schooling. So those of you who, you know, in Radio Land, you have your children, drag them into the room. This is the interview to listen to because you went to school and you still did law.
I did, but I did it when I was in my mid-30s.
See, she was a busy person.
Yeah, I was like a lot of young people. I did my high school, my CJEP, and then went into university. And after 2 years, 2.5 years of university, couldn't see what was the point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I left without a degree. And my mother was already dead, but my father was still alive. And he just despaired. How can you know? You have to go back. You have to get that piece of paper. And I said, I don't know what I want to do. And until I do, it's no point for me to spend money and you to spend money. And so I ended up getting married, did a bunch of different jobs. And then I saw some friends who were going to law school as mature students. And they were doing well. And I'm saying, I'm at least as smart as they are, if not smarter. So if they can do it, I can do it. So I was 33 when I went back to university and got my law degree.
By the time you got your degree, was Andala born?
No.
Phew, because I was going to say law, no. She threw motherhood and all of that as well.
No, I had Andala when I was 41 years old.
Good girl.
Yeah, I know. Big surprise.
Yes, I remember. And you know what I remember with that? We talk it every day today, right?
Yes,
plus
we
black
are.
History. I remember.
Black history,
but this
our
is
lives.
It, our lives and what we were doing and making it possible. Mm-hmm. I remember when Spice Girls was huge.
Yes.
And your daughter wanted the squeaky high heel boots.
Yes.
And you spoke to me and I said, it ain't all that bad. And I was battling with Lisi, who at that time thongs came in.
Oh, there
and
you
the
go.
Jeans, and you had to have the
it had to show above the
to show the thing, and
yes.
We just sat down and
we were pulling our
hairs
out.
Oh my goodness, that was seems like so yeah. long ago. And
today, Andarla is 29 years old, a videographer with a really good reputation here in Montreal, but also in New York because she lived there for 2 years. And now she's starting to build a whole other business and planning on launching it this spring.
And she has an amazing shoe collection. So see, I told you,
yes.
Spice Girl boots.
She has got the boots and shoes that she has. I look at them and I say, I wish the effing hell I wasn't. I won't say the actual word because I already
yeah.
got taken to task for saying bullshit on the air.
This is the right station. Okay. You're home.
She's got these platform boots that are like 6 or 7 inches platform and has, and they go up to the knee and
yeah.
has studs. Unbelievable. But they're, she's got so many different boots, and I look at them and I say, hell, if I was your age, that's what I'd be wearing.
I think maybe this spring, me and you are going to go get some boots. We're not going anywhere in them. We'll stay in our hearts and
we'll
watch.
We'll just sit
and
read.
Home.
Yes.
Right? And,
okay,
you
that
know?
Could work.
Yeah, watch some PBS in our boots, right?
No. Oh, okay, good.
Okay, good. After the Jewish community,
mm-hmm.
quite recently, the CAC government named you. He's using it. You're not getting the phone. Don't worry. You're going to get to ask her a question just now. Relax. As a, what's the position for the English Montreal School
Trustee.
Board? Trustee. Because
yeah.
they, I'm going to talk plain. You don't have to say nothing. But my opinion, since the Don Reed,
yes.
the whole wave of Black, African, Caribbean people who migrated here in the 60s, and some of them were commissioners. I think at one point, Don Reed was the acting head of the Montreal School Board. And now a lot of those people have retired.
Yeah.
I spoke to...
And it's left a void.
Yeah, yeah. You know, politics have changed. Quite recently, a retired former was PSBGM then, and we talked, and he said that you weren't even allowed to wear jeans in those days. It was suit and tie,
That's
even
right.
in the department where he was. And quite frankly, was Mr. and Sir to everybody was
That's
this
right.
place. And then our people, I said it, our people retired. And then every minute in the news, you hear they're fighting and quarreling. So that I just sort of say, well, the new set of people in, you know, they don't understand on whose shoulders they're standing. And the government, I believe rightfully, said, let's get somebody in there to see what the heck is going on. And having since finished that post, what would you say in terms of history and Black history, what you found?
Well, EMSB, one of the things that the senior administrators, I can't talk about
mm-hmm.
the council,
mm-hmm.
because when I came in as trustee, I had all of the powers. I was the council,
mm-hmm.
except for legal affairs, so that the council themselves could continue their court challenges of some of the government legislation. So I was the counsel. And the administrators, the senior managers, but all the way down to the teachers, the school principals and that, were very aware that more needed to be done, both on the human resources side, to have a more diverse, racially diverse, and in specific black employees from, you know, not just, you know, caretakers, mm-hmm. but, you know, teachers, head of departments, you know, school principals, and had begun to work with the Quebec Board of Black Educators,
okay.
which has been doing fantastic work.
Yes.
And so I know that that began, and there are negotiations and discussions going on, and I'm hopeful that a really strong partnership agreement is going to be reached, where QBBE will also be providing expert help on how to diversify, how to, you know, set actual benchmarks in terms of hiring, etc.
Career paths and track. Because yes, if you think yes. about it, a lot of children, you know, I'm seeing them rest in peace, Mr. Goddard. Yes. You know, just I'm seeing his face, Curtis George.
Yes,
they were like from the 70s up. A lot of administrators.
Yes, yes.
Those who made principal, I'm seeing Eric Mansfield and Mrs. Mansfield, his wife. They were vice principal. And then there were several people at the board level.
That's great.
And right now,
there's no one.
There's no one. And I mean, I look at the work of the QBBE and the BCCQ.
No, I shouldn't say there's no one. There is a one that when I was there, there was one senior black administrator at the headquarters, and that was the director of human resources, and she's fantastic, Anne. But if the commissioners didn't make a priority at the time of hiring blacks in specific, and all the way through and creating actual benchmarks and real numbers and an actual plan, then there's a limit to what Anne could do. And I'm happy that under the new director general, Nick, I don't remember his last name, but he has been leading on, along with other senior senior managers, leading on working on a new agreement with QBBE. So I'm really hopeful.
That's because, I mean, you know, you look in the history, and this is black history as well, and several people listening automatically for Caribbean people, when their children's, yes, the earrings are coming out. I'm not fighting today.
not with me.
Anyways, no, not my sisters. Yeah, she'll take me.
She'd take me.
Would. Yeah, for sure. It would be, actually, we could sell money to something like that. We'd make money.
Could.
We'll talk off air. The thing is that when you think about it, everybody whose children migrated here automatically, they, if their ages dictated that the child should have been put in grade 3 or grade 4, they would come into an institution. There was this racist thinking, oh, they're coming from the Caribbean, third world countries.
Yeah, the quality of education isn't anywhere near as good as ours.
Ours.
So we're going to have to hold them back.
Hold them back.
Meanwhile, the system of education in the Caribbean, at least in the English-speaking Caribbean,
yeah.
is based on Britain, and therefore the highest of quality.
In the world.
Yes.
And then out of that became children who were frustrated, started acting up, and then this whole thing of blacks are troublemakers. Some kids may have fallen through the crack.
Did fall through the cracks, not may have, did.
QBBE, as well as BCCQ, said no.
Yeah.
there needs to be some sort of testing. So when people say that we have done nothing as a community, because you hear it from the 30-year-olds.
Oh, yeah, but that's because they don't know the history.
We're talking today, spread the word, and that was it.
Yeah, when we don't know our history, what else do we expect of our young people? They think that we've done nothing. Whereas I've been interviewed fairly frequently over this past month because it's Black History Month, but also because of the show that television show mm-hmm. that's going to be aired on CBC called The Porter.
The Porter series.
And I was consulted by the producer, executive, the writer, mm-hmm. he also acts, Arnold Pinnock,
mm-hmm.
to get stories about porters in Montreal, in Little Burgundy. And one of the points that I make is that most people, most Canadians, and that includes Black Canadians, mm-hmm. do not realize that the reason why Canada finally modernized its Immigration and Citizenship Act in the late 60s, early 70s, in order to make it universal so that anybody could immigrate to Canada. If you had the point system, you weren't barred by your color, by your race, by your ethnicity. That's because of the CPR Order of Sleeping Car Porters.
Well, I wanted to
fought for that.
Exactly. And also I'm seeing his face, Mr. Jenkins.
Yes.
And oh my gosh, Mr. Hogg, Milton Hogg.
And there was Mr. Blanchard.
All these people.
Yes.
Who the union work that they were doing was so instrumental that a lot of Canadians, white as well, whatever,
benefited. All of the Southern Europeans, the Italians, the Greeks, you name it, that the Canadian government tried to keep out mm-hmm. under their racist immigration law, benefited from the universality, the new law. But they didn't know that that's because of the porters, Black porters, who fought for it, who went to Ottawa, who rented sleeping cars to travel to Ottawa, retired porters and active porters, to meet with federal ministers and to argue the case.
We're going to do some music, but I think what I got to do right now, before anything, this is Black History and not quite your interest level quite yet. When you're older and you look back on these tapes, right, you will get it. But Storm has been every February for the last 3 years and even this year again. And I'm going to move over a little bit so you could get right in here.
Here you go.
There you go. Come right up, child. Yeah. Has some questions about Black history that interests her. You don't have to look at me. You look at Auntie Marlene. You had your question. So go ahead, ask your question. Not to me, to Auntie Marlene.
Why does COVID, Black history mean so much to you? And why is it so important?
Black history means so much to me because it is me. And it is you, and it is your mom, and it is your dad, and it's your sisters, and it's that of the Italian Canadians, and the Greek Canadians, and the Jewish Canadians, and the Muslim Canadians. It's the history of every Canadian. That's what I want people to understand. It's the history of every single person who has set foot on this land, in the same way that the history of our Indigenous peoples, First Nations, Inuit, Métis people, is the history for everybody. And we need to embrace it as part of our history because it makes us who we are. And so I think it's important that we tell these stories and we keep telling them, and then others will pick up the stories and start telling them to their children and grandchildren, regardless of what race they are.
You know, there was a time, Stormy Warming, when people would say Black people do nothing. they're lazy, and that they all live on welfare, they don't want to work, all these kinds of things, when we were creating things and doing things, and we build a lot of these places and some of the schools and some of the rules, but as Auntie Marlene said earlier, a lot of people don't know. So we talk about this stuff every day. February is the month where we really talk about it more. I like to say that February is our New Year's Eve of Black information, because we start in February and we keep it going for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
You have another question for Auntie Marlene?
Mm-hmm.
No, you're good?
Yeah.
We're going to play some music. I wanted to know, Angel, you migrated here and you've been around for more than, you know, 35 combined or 40 almost years. Is there anything from your perspective coming here that you want to ask Marlene about?
Not really, you know. But
what but I you like do, having the mic.
Yes, yes, not really. I mean, you all got one thing, but I must say, I have to thank you.
Why?
Because of you, I've migrated and come here. It's you helped me.
Oh my God, I completely forgot that.
Yeah, yeah.
I completely forgot that.
Yeah, you see, that's what I'm saying. I don't even have to say anything.
Because that is history,
that
too.
That is history.
Yeah.
And that's the part, you know, that's why I always admire you, because it's because of that.
It's a change maker.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll fill in the audience, and that is what the very, very first time Canada started charging $975 to apply for your relative, and then you had all these other fee structures, and it was vigorously discussed before it passed. At that time, when Wayne and I got married, 1992, so it must have come in maybe 91, 92.
Before I was elected.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, we paid all this money, and there was this inactivity on his account. You couldn't hear anything. Nobody knew anything. And, you know, something was going on. And I'm calling everybody all the time. So I pick up the phone and call Marlene and say, look, all you take my big $975. We're preparing to buy a house. I could have did buy a fridge with that and a stove at that time. And
a dishwasher.
Thank you. And if you're going to take people's money, you need to get back to them. It's a service. And my girl, I have to say, kisses, 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 got up on one side of the floor, crossed over to Sergio
Marquis,
and say, hey, what's going on?
I was in the same party.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah. That's
but
right.
Because at the time when I came in 97, there were so many Liberal members of Parliament elected that it filled the government side and then, a whole bunch of rows on the opposition side. So because I was a newbie, I was seated on the opposition side, even though I was a Liberal. So, yeah, I did. I went to see Sergio Marquis.
And now today, reforms and how to make that work came out. Because long story short, somebody in the New York office left the job. And they did not take all those files that were on his desk.
That's right. And redistribute them.
To another person.
They just sat there.
And how I know this, I call, and one day somebody get to pick up the phone. And I was saying, hey, this is like weeks of calling. And I was talking to her and recognized that she had an accent. And I said, you sound like a sister. Are you a Caribbean sister? She says, I'm from Trinidad. I says, okay, good. Right? And she was the one who closed her eye and told me they were sitting on a desk.
Yeah.
And I had said that to you, and now you have to.
And what I'd like all of the listeners to understand is that I wasn't doing a favor mm-hmm. for someone I consider family. I was doing the job that members of parliament are supposed to do. And I did it for many other
oh my gosh.
Constituents and people who didn't even live in my riding, didn't even vote for me. They would come for help because their brother or sister or grand or, you know, parent or husband was stuck. They had applied and nothing was happening with their file, even though all of the documents that were required were there, the fees were paid, all of that. And so when I went to the minister and said, look, something's wrong. If the bureaucrats can't get their act together, then you need to make them get their act together. And so a lot of cases were then dealt with the way they were supposed to be dealt with.
And remember the context being, this was the first time you were doing it, and
yeah.
perhaps the back end of the decision had not caught up. And that is what you do with your MP.
Yeah.
They need to be accessible and responsive.
That's right.
I just remember when your office was on Grand, it was like millions of people at all times coming to you for various things.
Yeah.
Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to play some music. Do you have a favorite soca song? We'll discuss that off air because we've done all those banquets when every October and every April, there were lots of banquets and everybody danced to everything. Yeah. So when we off air, we're going to discuss what is that thing you want, you perhaps dance to.
Okay.
All right. CKUT 90.3 FM. We're going to play some music. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Marlene Jennings. And then we're going to talk about English rights and the Black community.
Nowadays, when you mention science or an invention, many people just feel that it came from the white man. Oh, no. They feel that is whites only created technology and all them machines that we just use daily. But what the damn fools don't know, blacks created things also. In books today, black people works they don't show. Oh yes, children, biology, science and their chemistry is only white scientists they see. But tell them who built the first block, it was Banneker, a black man. G.D. Samson started the clothes dryer. Today when you watch that electric light, a black named Latimer had the foresight to use carbon to make bulbs burn bright. A black man invented that light.
A black man invented that.
Ooh-do-do-do. Ooh-do-do-do. George Washington Carver revolutionize agriculture to produce more food for America. Oh yes. And in 1862, a common slave, I'm telling you, invented the propeller for the ship's crew. Henry Jones with his black locks to transport food in trains and trucks. He brought in the system of air conditioning. Oh yes. 1836, brother, a common slave, Henry Blair, gave the world what we call the corn harvester. And tell them the first successful heart operation, a black man, Daniel Williams, the egg beater by W. Johnson, an ex-black man, Elijah McCoy for lawn sprinklers, and today in all the
machines and cars. He made cylinder lubricators.
A black man invented.
He pumped in your car.
A black man invented that.
When Granville Woods made his draft, the white folks began to laugh until he invented the railway telegraph. Oh yes, J.A. Poor, a black farmer, 1899, as a thinker, gave the world the celebrated lawnmower. Yes, Percy Julian hit the scene when he took a little soybean and made a cure for arthritis the world had never seen. Oh yes, so my friends, please understand that many inventions, they were made by the hands of many a black man. You want more? Riding saddles made out of leather. 1878, the fire escape ladder. From Africa, that science bigger. And if I only mention them Egyptian, you'll see that all them things claimed by modern man is a
black man invented that.
Now if you join the chorus, you can do this some more inventions. Sing with the chorus.
A black man invented that.
Mathematics.
A black man invented that.
Cosmetics.
A black man invented that.
Architecture.
A black man invented that.
The steel band.
A black man invented that.
Shorthand.
A black man invented that.
Medicine.
A black man invented that.
Alcohol.
A black man invented that.
The subway.
A black man invented that.
The traffic light.
A black man invented that.
Medicine.
A black man invented that.
The reggae.
A black man invented that.
Jazz and bongo.
A black man invented that.
Calypso.
A black man invented that.
Love is beautiful. never feel ourselves inferior. The man above who made the night and day, and did all their equal parts to play. So if you are on our side, open your mouth and shout it with my how we go now.
Black is beautiful,
and when you look at it,
black is beautiful.
If you can't tell, and lift your hand like me, where you come along with dignity, how we go now.
Black is beautiful,
and let us sing it along.
Black is beautiful,
I'm black and tall. It's high time that we get rid of the old slave mentality.
Well, I tell you, So that's one year boogie down to whenever yes. it came. Everybody, that has such a memories.
It just brings joy.
Yes.
You want to get up and move and dance.
Montreal.
Even if you can't dance.
We had just graduated in 1983,
and it
was the summer of hot, hot, hot. And every party, every single party it was at. I think before we close off the hour, the thing I want to ask you is, so we talked about education. Just yes. to wrap up, what do you see as some of the reasons that now the institution that governs the English Black community, talking back in history, what happened, why there are not as many administrators? And I'm afraid to ask, do we still have a lot of teachers in English school boards?
Not enough. And we don't have administrators who are Black. And the big reason is, in my view, I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sometimes wrong. Not often.
Yes.
But sometimes
you kind of make a small misstep is what I prefer.
Occasionally.
Yes, yes, yes.
Very, very rarely.
My dear.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to be here with you.
I love being here with you. Is that when the whole debate, language debate, began in the 1970s and Bill 101 was finally adopted, many Blacks left Quebec.
Mm.
And who were they? Our best educated.
Mm.
And so you didn't have that second generation to take over from the Don Reeds and the Horace Goddards.
Mm-hmm.
And so that created a whole vacuum. Happily, over the last couple of years, we are seeing more Blacks going into education to become teachers.
Mm.
That's fantastic. And now we need to hire them. And then we need to provide them training so that they can become administrators, vice principals, principals, regional directors, and ultimately director general.
I also want to ask, do you think that work by some of the students and those in the know need to be done where we go back into the board and the new slates of people who are there to know what a rich Black history the PSBGM and then finally EMSB had because they don't know?
Yeah, but I think that's where the Quebec Board of Black Educators will play a significant role.
Okay.
QBB has had an agreement with what used to be the Protestant School Board of Montreal and then transferred over to the English Montreal School Board. But it's existed for 20, 30 years, but has never been renewed and expanded. It's just been the same agreement.
Okay.
And so they're now negotiating and discussing.